Hungry Dads, your guided tour through the delicate and often overwhelming balancing act between food indulgences and social acceptance. And now, as always, here are your hosts, Rod Budget and Hugh Gallen.
Welcome to this week's show. Tonight we're going to start out with a food for thought segment with our own Hugh Gallen. So Hugh, take it away.
Thank you, Rod. Tonight I want to talk about soda. And soda is controversial in a very real way. It's kind of the new smoking. But that's not really where I want to go. I want to talk about soda not as universally good or universally bad. I don't want to beat up on soda haters or on the soda industry. I want to take, as you've said before, the Hungry Dads, we take a rational look at snack foods. And in this case, you know, snack drinks, I guess I'll call them. And we want to take that rational look at a perspective of the Hungry Dad. And as I was thinking about that, I felt like I wanted to break down what is the Hungry Dad's perspective. And that's even something that maybe we haven't broken down. We're pretty far into this podcast, but I think we're still evolving and developing. And I know for me, when we came up with the name Hungry Dads, it really was a balance, as we've described ourselves. And it was a balance between these two ideas. First, you have the hungry side, right? Craving the junk food that we enjoy. And we want this kind of careless freedom to eat and drink what we want. And we have the nostalgia for what we had in our youth. And that's one side of us. But then we have the dad side. And as dads, we need to be responsible and we need to be, a good example to our children. So we struggle with that. And our dad bodies don't digest in the same way they used to.
They certainly don't. Yeah, I think at our core, you hit it right on the head. You know, it's that conflict, that internal struggle between the tasty food we've always loved and still love and trying to be somewhat responsible.
Exactly. And so when we look at soda through that spectrum and not the spectrum that kind of maybe has become so controversial, I think we can look at soda and say it's neither good nor bad, and it's both good and it's both bad. Rod, you know you and I are both lovers of soda.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
In fact, we had actually dreamt up, before this endeavor, we had dreamt up another endeavor. Do you know what I'm talking about?
This would almost certainly have to be Carbonation Nation, which for a long time I was a little reluctant to put out there in the general populace for fear of someone stealing our amazing idea. But I think at this point in time, I think it's probably not going to happen from the two of us. So let's put it out there. And if somebody wants to take our idea and run with it, more power to them.
Exactly. And Carbonation Nation, as one might guess, is an establishment where it's really just soda, fountain soda to be particular. And as I imagined it, there was rows and rows of different flavors of fountain soda. And I recall, you know how those little tubes that carry the syrup,
right?
And the tubes that carry the carbonation, those would be kind of strung all over the place.
Yeah, you got different colors running all over the place. The grape's purple, you got the traditional brown, the clear, the greenish yellow. So yeah, I mean, I always pictured it kind of a Times Square tourist establishment in the heart of Manhattan. You know, it's similar to how microbrews in the beer world got really, really popular over the past 10 to 20 years. I definitely think there's an opportunity for unique sodas from around the world, from certain parts of the country. Just looking at root beer alone, there are so many like niche root beers out there that, you know, I'm envisioning 500 taps, you know, and just the hoses, the syrups, Carbonation Nation.
With the perspective of several years, I had a couple of thoughts and revelations about this idea. And the first was how we never thought to call it the Carbonation Station, which I think is better because it doesn't sound like a stutter. Did we ever discuss the Carbonation Station?
I don't believe we discussed that. However, I'm pretty partial to Carbonation Nation because I like the repetitiveness.
See, I think it sounds like you're stuttering.
It's a ridiculous name, but it's a ridiculous place as well.
As an idea, I think it's funny, but to actually pitch it as a real thing, I think Carbonation Nation, you have to slow down so much that I...
Carbonation Nation may not have made it past the business plan.
Exactly.
May have been a little bit too in the clouds.
The other things that we didn't calculate for in this idea, and I'm not sure which side of the fence this puts it on as a better idea or a worse idea with the hindsight, but one was after we had this idea, they started seeing these fountain soda machines with all the options where you could mix them and have syrups and all these things. You see them at some of the fast food restaurants.
Yeah, Coke Freestyle, I think, is the big one now where it has pretty much every Coke brand and you can mix in vanilla, lime, cherry, I think.
That arguably speaks to that there is a fascination and a passionate fan of soda. And the other thing that we couldn't have seen coming was the war that the mayor of New York City put out on soda some 3, 4, 5 years after we thought of this.
Yeah, I don't think it would have flown during Mr. Bloomberg's term.
Well, it also could have proven to be that movement by Mayor Bloomberg could have proven to be a boon. For our listeners who might not know, Mayor Bloomberg, who is the mayor of New York City, amongst many initiatives he had, one was to ban sodas over a certain size. And it was a pretty controversial idea. Of course, he was looking out for people's health. He thought that was in the best interest of the citizens of the city. And, you know, his opponent said, well, this is just a nanny state where you can't even drink what you want. Suffice to say, I think Carbonation Nation could have been a lightning rod for that, potentially for the good of the idea. I think perhaps those who were critical of Mayor Bloomberg would have flocked to Carbonation Nation. Nonetheless, this is all speculation.
Hungry Dad.
We have said in the past, we love soda, but we've also said that we don't keep it in the house. For one reason, our wives don't prefer it in the house. It's not part of our weekly shopping list. And I think we both agreed we prefer it that way. We don't want it in the house. We don't need it in the house, even though we do love soda. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, it's because we know that it's not really good for us.
I mean, absolutely. I know it's terrible. Sugar, lots and lots of sugar, lots and lots of caffeine. I should address briefly, because some listeners are probably wondering, you know, why not diet soda? I just don't like the taste of diet soda. I've tried it many, many times. It has an aftertaste to me, and it just doesn't do it for me.
I agree. It's as simple as that. And while I certainly can appreciate the health risks of sugar, I'm still not convinced that those sugar substitutes are going to prove to be healthy either. You had mentioned in a prior episode sort of a self-diagnosed soda addiction. I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about your life and your history with soda and where you are today.
Sure. Yes. This will be therapeutic probably. Yeah, I can readily admit that I had a soda addiction and probably still do to some degree. You know, like I said, it's sugar and it's caffeine, both of which are scientifically proven to be addictive. And I think as Hugh touched on, soda's kind of a lightning rod right now as, you know, everybody's coming after it, attacking it. And I think part of it is that as a culture, we're just now evolving to see that copious amounts of sugar are really, really bad for your body, which I can readily admit. At the same time, I'm still going to drink soda when I want to every once in a while. So just going back, as a kid, we had soda in the house. As a child of the 80s, soda was kind of the thing. I don't think anybody really knew that it was bad for you, or, you know, maybe they thought it wasn't great, but certainly they didn't think it was totally detrimental to have this much sugar in your body. Fat was kind of the evil thing back in the 80s. Yeah, I drank a lot of soda growing up, and, you know, throughout high school, even into college, I never really even thought about it as being terrible for me until I got a little bit older and more information started coming out on mass amounts of sugar being very bad for your body. But, you know, honestly, I still drank a lot of soda. You have a problem. You need to try to stop drinking so much soda. And I went a year without drinking soda. I went over a year without drinking soda. And here's the interesting thing. When I drink a lot of soda, especially in my advanced age now, I feel, physically, I feel terrible. Like,
yes, I completely agree. And I want to keep, when you drink a lot of soda, and the day after day after day is what gets it.
Yeah, exactly.
If I have a large soda once and then not again, I think I can roll with it. But if I am drinking soda day after day after day, I do start to feel it.
Absolutely. So that brings us to present day, where I am drinking soda again from time to time. I've certainly cut down in a significant way over my earlier years. But, you know, there are times when I just go in and I need my 32-ounce soda, and I feel badly about it somewhat. That's the problem. It's always, I kind of feel bad about this, but hey, it's not heroin. It's not cocaine. My vice is soda. So how bad can it be? But at the same time, I think it can be pretty bad. So I've hopefully reached that happy medium where it's under control. If I crave a soda, you know, maybe once a week or once every other week, I can go in, I can get one, and then I can kind of cut it off and go back in a week or two or a month, whatever it might be. But there are times when I have a big soda, and the next day I'm like, that was good. I would really enjoy another soda. And that's what, you know, really, I really do believe it's addictive. It's sugar, it's caffeine. I believe there's an addictive quality to it.
Do you think that you have the same views or relationships with other foods or drinks, whether it be junk food, alcohol, anything like that?
Not at all. I think soda is my true vice. And that's why I think it's easily identified to me as an addiction or borderline addiction, because it's a relationship. It's mental. It's, you know, there's no rational reason why I need to go out and get a huge soda and drink it. It tastes good, yes, but so do candy bars. So there is definitely a mental aspect to, you know, it makes me feel good, it tastes good, it's a treat, I'm treating myself. And I think there's certainly, beyond that, there's a physiological aspect to it altering my body to want it again and again.
So you do seem to lean towards the soda is bad kind of camp. Am I reading you correctly?
That's probably correct in the fact that I don't think there's any doubt that drinking an abundance of soda is bad for you and leads to health problems such as diabetes as our sugar consumption has increased. At the same time, I'm still drinking soda and I'm trying to do it rationally. So I'm not one of these anti-soda campaigners. I think it's similar to anything else, that if you can do it in moderation, fine. I think anything in moderation is okay. I just think with soda, at least for me, it's addictive. I don't get addicted to chocolate. I don't get addicted to steak or cereal. I get addicted to soda.
Cereal is an interesting addiction. See, I think I could probably support a cereal addiction.
Hungry Dad!
So when we look at the soda through the Hungry Dad spectrum, I do think we've said this before about other things, whether we're talking about chips, and one of the key questions comes down is to not whether or not we're going to have it, but, you know, if it's worth it, and if so, how much, and when, and whether or not your wife needs to know about it. Those are kind of the Hungry Dad's questions that we ask ourselves. It's been a few years now, but I very unwittingly, without thinking, gave my 1.5-year-old daughter a sip of soda, and I got a stern talking to from my wife about that, and I was completely oblivious to the fact that this was a bad idea. I get it now, but it actually caused a little bit of a tiff between the two of us because her reaction was so visceral to the fact that I had done this, and I was completely thrown off. I think I get it now. Do your kids drink soda?
No, not at all. And I think that goes back to, there's a stigma around it. I mean, they eat chocolate every once in a while, not often, or candy, but soda is just on this whole other playing field.
And should it be? Because it is just sugar in the same way candy and chocolate are. Why has it gotten this new category that, you're right, it's a stigma?
That's a good question. I think I find it addictive. I feel like that might be part of it with young children, is we were raised on it and now I have a problem not drinking it. Whereas, you know, there's a chance for young children now to not drink it. And I think this is kind of, maybe not the first generation, but it's kind of a new thing where I don't see a lot of kids just drinking soda.
Yeah, I think that that is true. And yet we still drink it, but it's kind of like some of our other things. We have to keep it a little bit covert, and it's clearly not for the kids. And the question I have for myself is when does this restriction, this hypocrisy, when is that going to end? At what age?
Right, exactly.
The age is going to come. I mean, like any other thing, you restrict your child for too long. Suddenly, you know, when they have their own abilities, there could be this backlash where suddenly if they never got to taste soda, they're going to now crave it forever and become addicted to it exactly in the way we tried to restrict. So it's a real hungry dad's problem from my perspective.
Yes, this has become a huge problem to me over the past 15 minutes. So I'm now stressed out even more about parenthood. Hungry dads.
I wanted to try a little bit more that add some of the dads to the hungry dads, because this is we're going to be dealing with. Last summer, my family went to an event in my neighborhood, in my town, and it was called Family and Health Day. And I thought it was a great event. It had activities for the kids and, you know, various things. And I went to the food stand to get something to eat, and they had hot dogs and cheeseburgers. And I went up and I ordered a hot dog and a cheeseburger and a Coke. And the woman behind the counter looked at me quite seriously and said, we don't have Coke. This is Family Health Day. I said, oh, okay. And then I looked and I said, you have Gatorade? She said, yeah, we have Gatorade. And I said, okay, I'll take one of those. And I was first struck by the notion that, you know, look, it's Family Health Day. I get it. I don't know if hot dogs and cheeseburgers right off the bat are health food. But then they had Gatorade there as essentially the beverage of choice, as a soda alternative. And it was passing the Healthy Family Day test. What did the Gatorade people do to get this done?
I mean, the whole soda and sugary drink topic is just fascinating because it's a sociological thing. Gatorade is by some people seen as evil as well, but for the most part, I feel like it's always marketed itself as this energy replenisher for your body after you exercise. It replenishes your electrolytes, which is all marketing speak.
Gotta replenish your electrolytes.
Carbohydrates will do that. So
no, electrolytes will do that.
Yes.
Oh, is there a difference? I don't know.
I don't even know what an electrolyte is. I'll just come out and say it.
I picture them as sparkly things that go in my body and add like little bits of electricity to my cells to make me strong.
Yes.
Does that sound right?
That sounds right. I think we've solved it right here, folks. That's what we do.
I'm a scientist.
No, but I think these quote unquote energy drinks, and not so much energy drinks because that's a whole other category now too, but Gatorade and maybe Powerade, they've always associated themselves with working out and being athletic, and it's a recovery mechanism for your body, which is just total garbage. I mean, it's water and sugar and a little bit of flavoring. It probably doesn't have quite as much sugar per serving as soda, but it's not far behind.
See, I haven't thought about it that hard until what you just said. I had always given Gatorade the benefit of the doubt that it is a useful drink for the athlete. What I found interesting was that I couldn't break down the percentages, but there's so much consumption of Gatorade that is not by the athlete. Where you see it sold at the gas stations and the grocery stores, these are not the places athletes shop there. It's in the same thing as the soda aisle and the soda section. And I know I drank one while watching TV and having done no activity. and I know I've been guilty of looking at my selections and saying, soda's not so good for me. But that Gatorade,
yeah,
that seems like a more reasonable choice. But the good Gatorade people definitely got themselves in the health category. I feel like they've convinced through what you just said, and they've convinced certain people that it's different than soda. I'm not convinced that it's any different than soda. I mean, I haven't broken down the science of it, but if there's a distinction, I think it's very, very subtle.
I think there's a minimal distinction. There's no carbonation, which carbonation inherently isn't bad for you. And I think there's slightly less sugar, but I don't think there's anything in it that's particularly healthy for sure. And I think it goes back to they've always positioned themselves as being associated with replenishing your fluids, working out. So you're in a healthy mindset. So how bad can it be if, you know, this person who's working out is drinking this product? Whereas traditional sodas have marketed themselves a lot of ways, but never really associated themselves with athletes and replenishing themselves.
I don't want to initiate a relapse for you, Rod. I desperately don't. Like I said, I'm a big soda fan, and I can appreciate that there's a need to keep it under control for myself and for my family. To get nostalgic for 1 second, I'm backtracking way back to Rod's childhood. What was the soda of choice in the budget household?
Everything you ask is very interesting tonight because it's bringing back all these memories. There was.
This is the therapy session. Yes, this is secretly an intervention.
It's wonderful.
That we'll be broadcasting for everybody. The people will be by soon to take you away.
From my distant childhood past, from what I can remember, this is like, you know, age 6 to 10 or 12, there was either Coke or Dr. Pepper in the house, probably on a rotation based on what was on sale or something like that. And at, like, Little League baseball games, there would be... So, yeah, that reminds me of yet another childhood memory, if I digress a little more for a moment. With these Little League baseball games, each game, it was always one set of parents' responsibility to bring the refreshments for after the game. So it was usually soda or Capri Sun, and sometimes it was really, really exciting, good soda, but every once in a while you would have the parents who would bring kind of the generic store sodas, the Chex of the world, and things like that. And it was at an age where you were young enough where you didn't know you're supposed to hide your disappointment. So it's always a disappointing memory from my childhood is I'm pretty sure I was in the camp that when the cooler was cracked open and Chex Cola was sitting on top, that I would just say, "Aw, come on. Are you kidding me? Where's the Coke?
Little Rod Budget.
Where's the Sun Kiss? Where's the Mountain Dew?"
No tact whatsoever.
And I'm sure the parents were standing right there. So I apologize to all the parents out there who I have ever done that to.
Hungry Dad.
My last soda point is regarding what I will call a spectrum of quality on sodas. And we already talked about fountain sodas when we dreamt up Carbonation Nation. I think part of our origin was that we had such an appreciation for fountain sodas that they were the best tasting and the best quality. My ranking from there goes with a fountain soda being the best way as far as flavor to get your soda. I think your next choice is a can or a bottle. An individual can, I think. Even though drinking from a bottle is a little bit better, I feel like the can keeps it much colder.
Can is definitely colder. That's a big point.
And then you go to your bottle, like your individual bottle, and then to your 2-liter bottle. The 2-liter bottle, obviously, it's, you know, multiple uses. You lose the fizz over time. And then on the dead back end of soda quality is what I call a bar soda. So if you ever go to a bar and you order a soda and they get it from that little wand behind the bar, it will almost always taste horrible.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not worth getting.
I agree 100% with all of your rankings. My only caveat will be I do think fountain sodas are generally by far the best, but there is a bit of a risk involved because it has to be well calibrated every once in a while.
That's
true.
And
it's the most disappointing thing in the world if you don't notice it before you've bought it and walked out the door, or if you're at a drive-through. But sometimes the proportions are a bit off and it's overly carbonated or overly syrupy. Usually overly carbonated, so you don't get any sugar taste. But it's perhaps the worst feeling in the world.
Hungry Dad!
Visit our website at hungrydads.com. Follow us on Twitter at hungry_dads. This has been a Hungry Dads production.
I'm a scientist.